Today is December the 6th, 1973. The following is a recorded interview with Mr. L.C. McRoberts, a resident of Kingsville for the past 62 years. The interview is about the history of the Kingsville area as he remembered it. He will discuss the development of industries such as the railroad, ranching, dairy farming, cotton and other agriculture, oil and gas. He will discuss education in this area as well as the social life of early Kingsville. In addition, he will relate some interesting and exciting events of his own lifetime here.
Mr. McRoberts, where were you born?
Born in Jefferson County, Indiana.
Yeah.
December the 16th, 1889.
I see. When did you come to Texas?
Well, I come a roundabout route. I went down in southern Illinois for a short time and then went to Pocatello, Idaho for about a year and a half and then came down here on December the 2nd, 1911.
I see. So you've been here how long? About 60 years? 60 some odd years?
62 years Sunday.
What was your job when you came down? What was your occupation?
I was a clerk of railroad.
I see. Which railroad?
I don't hear too well.
Which railroad was it?
It was the St. L.B.&M. Railroad, now the Missouri Pacific.
I see. How did Kingsville compare then to now?
Well, divided by about 16, and you got the towns and all when I came. About 2,300 when I came here. Now 30,000.
At that time, the town was mainly centered around the railroad shop and the roundhouse, wasn't it?
The railroad is here, and the town and all on account of the King Ranch.
Uh-huh.
Is the headquarters of the King Ranch, and they were instrumental in getting the railroad brought in here. And of course, they had a town for the railroad people, and they had their shops and the homes for the shopmen and for the roadmen and the people who ran the railroad. That's what it was all for. Agriculture was an afterthought. They sold off some of this in later years to they called them people from the north, any home suckers is what they called them, and they brought them down here and sold them this land. They weren't experienced in dry land farming, and they mostly went kerplunk, but some of them sweated it out, and a lot of them who did now got oil well in the backyard, and they're doing all right.
How did the education back then differ from the way it is now?
Well, Mrs. King, the old lady, the widow of the old Captain King, who along with Mr. Kennedy got all this land together down here, about 1.5 million acres, of which 1 million of it was the King Ranch and 500,000 was Mr. Kennedy's. Still a Kennedy Ranch down here. Mrs. King was the daughter of the first Presbyterian minister south of the Nueces, out in this country, which was Catholicism up to then, you know, mm-hmm. The Catholics. They'd come in there and taught their religion and their converts. And she was very much in favor of education. And so was her daughter, Mrs. Claiborne. And they were really back of it. And they built and gave them that present high school building down there, which is a junior high now.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first legal building. They gave them some smaller stuff around. Built one here, one over there where Plato School is now, and one in Mexico. They gave them all the schooling nearly that they needed to start with, and then some. And have been very much in favor of education and helps for education. There was a Claiborne School down north of town here. That's one. Mm-hmm. They built that. They took an old cotton mill and reworked it. And they and the Humble Company together, we just gave it to them. That's cheaper than paying taxes and interest. It
certainly is.
But and as to how the college got its original start, who thought of it, and who had a dream big enough to think that they could get a college here, there was nothing here, you might say. About 5,000 people when they started to beat in the woods to get that college located here. And there wasn't that many people between here and Harlingen, Texas. So there had nobody there. And back in this country, it was ranch land. So there never was a reason back there for this college even being here, so far as location is concerned. One was needed where the, and that would have been Corpus Christi, where that's where 75% of the people live. There in Robstown, I think. But it's always been an education town. We had good schools here all along.
Who promoted the school here? Who was the A&I?
Oh, just the ranch and their. See, the ranch was the one big institution here, and the railroad was the other, and everything else just accidentally fell in here. The people came in here and started stores to feed the people who were working for the ranch and working for the railroad. And nobody can tell why a town is or why it ever succeeds.
Right.
But nobody, there's no plan, there's no nothing. Most of them grow up to half their total final growth without even a plan as to where we'll have the business district and where we'll have this and where the school is here and a residence here and a slaughterhouse there. Without rhyme or reason, but they somehow they balance out in the long run. And then the good Lord, I think, could be the only final one to ask about it.
When you came, was the town laid out in lots?
Oh, yeah. The first, it was laid out in lots and had the second edition already on it. But I'm living here in the second edition, I believe, block 84, something like that. And it was laid, but there were no streets, there were no paved streets. Quite a few of them were graded, and the minutes were needed, and of course it was a dry country. We just said with two things, muddy as it could be when it rained, if it did, and dusty all the rest of the time, sandy.
You have there's a school, an elementary school here named after you. How did that come to be? How did the elementary school come to be named after you?
I spent 21 years on school board.
You did.
And they called me up one day and said, do you mind if we name this school after you? And I said, now, wait a minute. To get your face on a coin, you've got to be dead. I don't want to carry this too far. I said, no, you don't have to. So it got to be a habit here of naming schools after people who were alive. Gillette School, named after John Gillette, who's the superintendent, still superintendent of school here. I was just got off the school board when that was built. And there's some more of them around here. Harold, the Lynn has dug up somebody in the recent past who had been connected to the school. That thing still running?
Mm-hmm. When
you know, there's some things of interest around here that I don't know where you'd fit them in. There was two fellows who were pretty good talkers that came down here from one of the Carolinas, talked King interest, ranch, and building the cotton mill here. And they were the product was to be twine, which you know was a necessity in all the stores about the time you were born. And then they got tape.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, and up until they built this mill here to make it, twine, It was made out of the fly and the stuff that they took out of the cotton they were making good things out of, and then they took that and the knots and whatever it was, they just spun it into a wrapping twine. That's all they wanted to do, just tie up a package and get it home.
Uh-huh.
So you couldn't compete with the people who were using waste to make wrapping twine. Even when we were making it out of stuff, you could make a silk shirt out of it. It just, it looked like a bale of that first high-grade cotton looked like something you ought to put sugar and cream on. It got a yellow. Oh, it's pretty. Well, that went kaplunk. And that was Mrs. Clayburgh's idea, particularly. She wanted a place for the Mexicans to work, especially the Mexican young girls and young women. An excellent idea, but they started off on the wrong foot by what they were making. The stuff that you could make out of this cotton had to be made by experts, and we didn't have them. We had the people that you could teach to run the spindles and stuff and make a twine, awful easy. And imperfections didn't mean anything in it, but it meant everything in the other stuff, you see. So she got off on the wrong foot there. And they done that in the agriculture here to start with. They started raising onions here. They were going to flood the world with onions and feed all the Jews that there was. You know, they got to have onions to cook. But they found out that when you shipped a carload of onions from here to New York, that you had an Israelite on the other end of the line. He wasn't going to give you back a damn thing. It just didn't fit. So, wire them back, they didn't have enough, couldn't sell it for enough to pay the tax, and pay the freight on it. So the onion business went. And then they went in the dairy business here, and Mr. Clayburgh, by high-toned bulls, paid as high as $40,000 for them, and breed some high-toned bulls of our own here, and then put them out to the dairymen. Here's a dairyman, a couple of three dairymen down here, got 25, 30, 40 cows. Well, they put a bull down there to be used by them. Well, the bull didn't belong to them, and they knew they were going to use it through the breeding season, and then you got to where you got the bulls back, you had, that's about all you had was the number and tags you had on it, because they just starved them to death. You can't tell that problem. That's a good thing about me. I want somebody to try to come in, and I'm not afraid of robbery, they'd have down out here, they'd get anyhow. That, the creamer business, they worked awfully hard at that. And it's a hard business, any way you go at it. It's long hours and hard work. But finally they just had to give it up. And very little dairying done here now. They have small grain and cotton, and not much cotton.
It's mainly ranch land.
Rain, so they couldn't get their cotton gathered this year. Then the railroads, there lays a sad story. The railroads, this little town started as well balanced. It had two farmers around here. It had all of the railroad trade because they were here. They had to get on a train to go to Corpus. There's no other way to get there. Like cars were scarce as hen's feed. And that caused quite a good bunch of stores to grow, come in here. And then the railroads got tired of passenger business. The cars came on where they didn't have much. And they didn't try to get any. They tried to force it away to get rid of it, and they did. And so they left them nothing but the freight business. And then the steam engine went out of style because the electric outfit, as they have now, is much, much better motive power, easier to shift around and go places with it. That cut out this shop down here. There was motive power, there's always motive power back in the oil. Look at railroads here now. It's owned by, I don't know, I forgot the name of those four half dozen corporations. They build those and lease them to them. And they take them in, have a constant flow of the guts in one of those things, and they just run it into their main shop and put new stuff in it, and then away they go again. So cut out the shop, man.
When was this?
Oh, within about the last 20 years, this shop went away from here. So it's been a pretty good, it's been a good shop town, a good railroad town up to then. And so that, the cotton mill went, and the railroad shops went. And in between that time long in the, oh, I guess in the early 20s, they had a cotton oil mill here. Well, it was ill-conceived from the start. They didn't have the speed here to crush to run the darn mill. There wasn't enough to operate it. And it's a specialized outfit. Short profit and long, hard work on the thing. They just didn't have it. That was a ranch. They put in the ranch. They put in the cotton mill. They put in the cotton oil mill. And they brought the railroad in here. And they stole all this land around here. They put them in the creamy business, and they had to take that over from them. We had a beautiful business here. I was with the creamy, which was a ranch outfit for 30 years. And
you worked for the King Ranch?
Yeah.
In the dairy?
And worked for them just here on and everywhere I did. Mainly through the bank down there. They wanted something done. I got the privilege of doing it. So that's pretty much the history of this thing here. It's been extremely interesting to spend 60 some odd years watching the country grow up from nothing down here.
How did this part of the country compare to where you came from in Indiana?
Well, here's a comparison. I was just looking in this one of these the other day. The town that I was really raised in, the time I was 15 years, well, I spent 4 years there. And then more than that, but 4 years of playing football in high school and then out and leaving there. And at that time, there was about 5,500 people in this town. Now there's about 7,200. That's over 60 some odd years. It has less than 30% increase.
So Kingsville's been a bigger grower than
so here you see, we in that time, this town has grown from 2,500 say to 30,000. Growing 12 times as much.
How about the oil industry here? How's that affected the economy and growth?
Not as much as you would think. The ranch owns nearly all this county after all, you know. Mm-hmm. The outsiders own 70,000 acres, I believe, is what they cut off and sold. Didn't realize the mistake and quit. They haven't sold any damn foot since then. They just... Mr. Kennedy down in the county south of us here, he got smarter earlier. He sold off some land around Sarita. Built a cotton, gin. And realized that he just had sold some people some land to do something that wasn't for that purpose. It was for grazing cattle. That's what he wanted for, and he bought it all back. Maybe one outfit, I think, held on to theirs and their relatives. But it's been a constant trial and error method of figuring out what they're going to do here. It seemed like they had finally about hit on it. That is a small grain which can be, you don't have to plow it every hour and a half like some of them do. They prove that you can plant it and go on and leave the stuff, and you'll gather just about as much grain all over it and you can leave it alone. But no, they're going to be, and of course with cotton, you've got to take care of it from the start until you get that picker in there. And if you get that picker in there with grass in it, well, you just want to might as well give it set it fire. Because the only thing you have to take this down wire grass out of cotton. And, they finally come to the conclusion that the people in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Missouri, and all the Middle West country up there knew a long, long time ago that that front end of a cow was put on there to gather the crop with. She's supposed to eat grass in her main diet with a little dry stuff and turn it into milk. And they will even go out here on the ranch and see an old cow or a calf there, and if she's about to bust it, it can't take care of all of it, and she can never drop that out of the grass up there. But cattle has a limitation as to the number of acres that you must have. You can't, we can grow one cow on 10 acres, but you damn sure can't make a living off of one cow. You've got to have thousands or more acres in order to feed enough cows to raise enough calves.
When you came to South Texas, were you married? Or
no, I came down here, in, as I said, in December the 2nd, 1911. And I went home and married a gal I went to school with, Wade, with. Let's see, June the 18th, 1913. That was throwing the boo-boos to the dogs. I left here on June the 13th to go up and get married. That was June the 13th, 1913, too. I said boys wouldn't even wear a 13 on their football jacket.
Do you recall any exciting events that happened around town? Just
when we beat Rob's down in football.
That was the most exciting thing.
Well, you know, they were, I don't know where it was. One of them was a couple of exciting evenings back in the time of when the bandits were coming across the river, the Mexicans were coming over here and were shooting up things. This first railroad bridge outside of town down here caught a fire after dark and blazing merrily. And I was then chief clerk to the superintendent over at the railroad here. Of course, we who were with the railroad saw the fire and knew it couldn't be anything but railroad property. We didn't know what it was. So we gathered down to the office, and that's where my office was then, and found out what it was. The old iron-headed sheriff here had a squeaky voice, and that's about all he had to recommend him. Anyhow, he had it lined up. They were going to get some cars and some gondolas, they call them. They were steel cars, you know what, stuff they put on the railroad, all the tracks, roads, and stuff. They were going to get some of the fellows, well, they gunned around there, you could have stopped the Peruvian army with them. And they were going down there, and some of them are going to get out and encircle this place. And somebody that leaned up against a lot of wire and said, what do you expect them to do? Stand there and shoot at each other? If they're encircling each prisoner, one fellow see the shot, he blazed away at it. Maybe his compadre around on the other side. So they threw that out. And they just finally sat still in the damn fire and burned itself out. They went down close enough to see it. I don't know who set the fire yet, but it burned down. They had to build another one right quick. And then helped fight a battle about 60 miles away. That's close enough to. The Mexicans didn't attack the Norris Ranch down here at King. You've heard of that, have you? Well, there was a fellow down there, Mr. Cesar Clayburgh, who run that ranch down there for the part of the King Ranch. He kept his ammunition locked up. He didn't know if he'd steal it and shoot every bit of it up. But they didn't know where he had it this time or how he had it, where it was. But they hadn't cut the telephone wires yet, and we could talk to them there in the little ranch house in the north. And trying to tell them where the darn ammunition was. They were running out. Well, they never did know how many Mexicans, if any, they killed, but well, they had a one or two wounded there. Been not too much. I'll step. But Cesar used to have what he called his Sunday school class. And at least twice a month, if he wasn't wavering, somebody's phone would ring here and everybody would be alerted to come down to the Sunday school class. I always go down Saturday afternoon on the train and get there by 6 o'clock. The old man would be waiting out front there, waiting for that train to come in. He's ready for them to arrive. And the poker table already set up. Ready to just 8 people sit down and we'll be hacking at each other. And old Willie Flores, the head cook there, he had that old stove. He had a coal fired and a wood fired stove. He's going to get himself hot sure as hell when he started. And he did. He'd have that ready. But there wasn't anything like eating first. You had to play poker about 2 hours. And then about 8 o'clock, he'd go in and eat. And back to work again. And it was a brilliant. It wasn't any hog killing outfit. Everybody just enjoyed it. They all enjoyed playing poker to start with. And enjoyed being down at that ranch just as much. And the food, too, was just what you didn't get here. That is a most wonderful experience. Let's see, he had the whole dial, let's see. Good Lord, over 25 some odd years. If I can remember when I saw one, the Derby, I could tell when the old man died, because he died just a month before the assault won the Derby. And if he only could have lived through that and saw one, the three, the Preakness and the Belmont, too, he wouldn't have survived, though, if he'd died happier. the old man was away when they had really tried to take. There's somebody, well, I guess everybody that you could have gotten anything out of is dead now. There's some pretty sticky times between, I always say, between the south end of the county and Raymondville, and life is, there's maybe kind of a little wandering around there. They were just bandits is what they were. They were enjoying the fat of the land. They were eating damn good calves.
Was this land all fenced in and everything when you got here?
Pretty much, yeah. You know, Mr. King, and I guess Mr. Kennedy, were the first ones that ever dreamed of fencing this country. And they first... A lot of the old ones who were running cattle here ahead of Mr. King, and they said, why fence this? Why buy it? You can run cattle on it, and that's all you want to do with it. And, well, they wanted to own it, and they wanted to put something around it. They wanted to know what was theirs, and that it was covered by fence. And so they, first fences that they put up, were made of lumber. That was expensive even then. And they got away from that. Somebody learned how to make barbed wire. But then they didn't like that either. So they finally settled on smooth wire. And that's all you find on the King Ranch, yes. You find a piece of barbed wire there that somebody stepped in and put it there when they weren't looking. There was an old fence over between the Chapman Ranch this way, long in there. A smooth wire that was put through holes in the post. It must have been there 50 years, but it's still a fence. And I made a fool of inquiry, not having any idea why wire would last that way, and they said, well, it was pure iron wire. It didn't have any, no sulfur in it. And so if you get sulfur out of the iron, it'll last forever. Mostly carbon. Anyhow, that fencing was a big deal. I remember here, after one of the years they had one of these big storms, I think it was the 19th storm, possibly it was 1916. The ranch had one horrible bill, deduction on their tax for windmills. All they had to replace all about all they had, repaired some of them. And of course, the revenue outfit came waltzing Matilda down here and wanted to go inspect these things here. I didn't want them. They said, all right, get ready. It'll take about a month. And they kind of cocked his eye and what he means. Said, well, we'll fix up a bulk wagon and a cook shack and stuff to go along. We'll take you around over there. Oh, he didn't want nothing. We said, well, now, how you can check him, you can, damn sure can't walk. And the cars won't go to every one of them. And they've all been blown down and repaired, and they're out there. Well, finally, we took a look at one or two or three and said, well, this is ridiculous. Of course, they blow down. Storm comes through here. Not all storms won't blow down, but a lot of them do. So I think he got a conversation with the head office, wherever, probably in Austin, and they said, well,
what kind of effect did that storm have on Kingsville? What kind of effect did those hurricanes have? The 1919 storm was the worst one, I believe. What kind of effect did they have on Kingsville?
Oh, It blew the hell out of me. What kind of what?
Effects did it have on Kingville?
Oh, not as bad as you would think, because just 3 years before, we had had our first real storm since the town had been built. And it was just as full of shacks as it could be. But it damn sure wasn't when that storm got through with it. So the shacks weren't blown down, had to be repaired, and most of them were replaced and rebuilt. And there wasn't enough trash to look bad, but it was plenty. It was real bad. I was the chief clerk and superintendent down here in 1919 when that came through. And we battened down everything we could up there. We had the long poles. You remember seeing the old office building here? Well, anyhow, they had curtains that you could let down. It'll keep the sun off through the inside. Walkways, no hallways in it, on the outside. So we battened those down, didn't beat him out of them, tore the canvas all up, and but didn't, damn, he wasn't too much. I was living out on West King in a box house, you know, where they put boards up and down, hit OG vats inside and out. And everything's nailed, and they're amazing things. Every nail holds, and you do it the first time it gets wet and it's salt air, I guess it rusts in there. And where they'll, and there's some hanging out that will flop loose and beat something. Of course, rain will blow through it. You can't help that. And ye God, this place here in 1967, I believe it was, when it raised a couple of foot.
I know it's Beulah, or I don't remember which one.
Well, yeah. Look at here. You just see water rippling and just standing in here.
Inside your house?
Inside. Yeah, it blew through every place. It just didn't miss anything. Well, but we're fortunately a little farther from the Gulf than Ingleside and those places mm-hmm. over there. When you were gone, I can think of a herd of things that the posterity would get along without it. K-O-C-H, I don't remember his name, initial. But he bought a bunch of land down there, all that Rivera settlement land down there was bought by old man Cook and sold off, just like we did this up here through the Kingsville Land and Investment Company. And they were eating each other down there. They just didn't have anything in that country at the time. They it just dry land straight out, and they had some droughts in there. 1916 was horrible, and most of them were. However, they had a depot there and a depot agent, and they had a cotton gin. This is at Rivera down here. And several businesses and a bank. It was a regular little town on its way, it looked like. But the times were such that they just didn't make any money down there. And they left, a lot of them. And some of them couldn't left. They just didn't have any way to get anywhere, so they stayed there and managed to keep from starving. They found a little town in Watlinville over there. They never got to be a town, I don't think it was supposed to be, but just a little stores and amount to anything, and church, that is a prime thing. And then down at Rivera Beach, 15 miles from Rivera, down to Rivera Beach, they had general store, drug store, grocery, and I don't know, and this hotel. We used to go down to that hotel and Sundays that we could get in and could afford it during the summertime, take the kids down there, bathing, fishing. Oh, just wonderful.
Coke had planned for that to be a resort area, hadn't he?
Huh?
He had planned for that to be a resort area down there,
yeah.
Didn't he?
But he, the old man, was too old to start with, and he didn't last out to see what could have been done with that thing down there. There was, oh, it was just amazing what a man and what he could have done with that old hotel. And he keep it just as primitive looking as you could and build a beautiful golf course around that thing that just perfect set up with waving up and hemming up rattlesnakes to every place you looked. The young fellow who surveyed that country down there, Frank Cook, he was division engineer over here at the railroad, civil engineer, when I was working out of the superintendent's office, when I was chief clerk superintendent. The two young squirts, and we practically run this division. It just developed into our job to do it. Nobody else knew. Mr. Nolan, superintendent, and he, as long as he thought I was doing all right, he didn't bother. Well, he knew what was going on. Why worry himself about it? We were doing all right. So, Cook said that when he was surveying that, his name was COOK, Frank Cook, and it was KOCH, which is pronounced Cook. Or anyhow, he said he had a boy that was a chainman, the two or three boys that helped him do the surveying down there. They just, by golly, left there and damn near run away. The snakes was just got on his nerves. And all it was, then the hell, they were there. Rattlesnakes, he called. But they would have gone away pretty soon if they'd have cleared up and gone. But I see, show the way the cotton business is going in this country. We had a gin at Rivera, a gin at Serena, a gin at Rivera, two at Ricardo, two in Kingsville. We had one gin in Ricardo. They still had one. I think they still have one gin in Bishop, but I'm not sure of that. Sure do.
What did y'all do for recreation or for social? What kind of social life did you have back when you first came?
When you had to walk here and everywhere you went, you didn't have much social life. You didn't know we're going to want good enough to even walk to get together. It's too far. Well, we had dances, and we got along, and see, my family started along in 16. 18 and 20, that's three of them. And about time, about 21 or 2, the cars were getting, not plentiful, but getting quite a few of them, put them in a plastic with Model T's. And we'd get to grab one of the Model T and load her up and go down to King's Inn, at Rivera Beach, stay over maybe until Monday morning. Kids have a wonderful time. If they can swim and the kids can play up and down that beach. I know it came in one day with an old half of a cow's head, you know, bleached out. They was so excited. They were the oldest one in the crowd. It was about 6 or 7 years old. And they had found a monster now. That was all there was to it. And some of them, it used to be a player. Some of them told them it's a maverick. That's what it is. And they we didn't tell them any difference. They found out later on, of course, that they had really discovered something down there. Another place, the old Rivera Beach, I believe it was Fort McIntosh over at Laredo. Those officers, that was a homing ground for them for their leave. They have a 30-day leave. They just got up their family and come over. Bathing, fishing, eat till they were silly and not move a hand if they didn't want to. And the place just...
How many attempts have there been to bring liquor into Kingsville? Or what kind of success
have we had? They had lots of bootleggers. And they made their way into up the railroad through the brush, night traveling mostly. And then San Diego never did go dry. You know. It was then yet. Oh, God. That town of San Diego is one for the book. Well, they talk about Watergate. You multiply this thing by the number of people involved, like Watergate, and this thing will snow them down over here. Over there. Well, anyhow, we don't want to get over to Duval County, but it's free state of Duval. Well, you see, we had dances. We had an opera house here, too. Built that way back there.
Where was that located?
The Rags and Mercantile Company, you know where it is, and the lumber company, the hardware and lumber company, next 50 feet there. And it goes up, it had a second story, and then on that corner of it over there, the north, the southwest, east corner, there was on the second floor was an opera house. Well appointed, too. It had everything that it took. And, high things for the scenery and the flies and all that stuff. Yeah. And I had some shows there and they had some local givers. They had, after the college came here in 25, they had some college faculty stuff in here there. And let's see, we had a football team here. But we didn't have any horse racing or any rodeos. We didn't have enough people here for competition. No horses. And I had them by rodeo. Actually, seen one. I've seen just one or two times. I can get tired of hanging around watching 9 or 10 fellas fall over the horse in the first 6 seconds. I'm running out of steam.
Okay, well.
When you walk out the door, I can tell you. It's that. When I came here, the old King's Inn was right where the Kingsburg Bank is now. It was a three-story outfit. It was really a 2.5. It was a brick, I believe, up to the top of the second floor, and then wood from there on. Then it came along in about the 19-teens, somewhere, I don't know just when, 13 or 14, and built Casa Ricardo, over where that high-rise apartment is set over there. Nice little hotel. It was well appointed. Every room had two outside to it with wind, like sleeping out in the room. And the traveling man made this town pretty several years because it was just a pleasant place to spend, do nothing. Sit on the porch you wanted to, or down the lobby, or and good food. And two or three trains a day stopped there, and they fed them. Quite a ways. Then they let it go to rack and ruin. Man's the most wasteful creature on earth, and he buys and builds just feverishly so he can tear it down in 10 years. But that, and then when I first came here, the general offices of the railroad were right across from where the old depot is, the passenger depot, right across the little gold palms and stuff there. It was about the same as the three houses that had been kind of welded together in there. That was the entire general office of the railroad, except for their big dogs in Houston. And they tore that down in 1913 and built right across where the Exxon outfit is now. And they tore it down. I mean, they had to hire somebody to tear it down because it was built to stay there. And they did. Well, there's the entire entrance, the guts of the town have been torn out and rebuilt. The whole, and that was all it was. The King, the Clayburgh Bank had burned down and been rebuilt before I got here. So they couldn't blame that on me. But anyhow, now they moved out of that and the city moved in it, and they moved into their new place, looked like the Acropolis. And just as out of place as it can be. It was built to sit on a hill, that thing was, not to sit down. But that's what they want. And I guess I shouldn't censor them because it's their money and they got plenty of it. So buy what they want.
This concludes the interview.